Welcome to Breaking Good, the officially unofficial podcast for Breaking Bad on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 3, Episode 4, entitled Green Light. What do you think of this episode?
It is a great episode of Breaking Bad. Had some funny stuff. Still not much action, but again, they have to take their time. This is a slight spoiler, but Walt gets back into cooking meth.
What?
I know.
What?
I know we said we'd never do that, but it takes, you know.
You mean in 2.5 more seasons of this show, Walt cooks another batch?
He's out. It's just watching a guy, watching a nerdy middle-aged white guy blow $500,000 in cash. I mean.
Doesn't sound like much fun.
But it takes a while to have that, to get him back in. It can't just be any one reason, you know. Also, I think that. From a Villa gang standpoint, it needs to come from a certain place too.
Sure.
You know, like
I talked about last episode, there are always obvious motivations for these characters, and they all seem to fall within their character, and it takes a while to develop that, you know?
Right. But him getting cancer again wouldn't be a great reason to start cooking meth, because we've already seen that. And you know, we're debating about what is the deal with Walt. Is this for his family? Is this a stubborn pride issue?
They're developing
those themes of what it's like to actually turn into the bad guy, go from Mr. Chips to Scarface. I would love to know how many times we actually said that on the podcast.
We got the breakfast count. We need the Chips to Scarface count.
We do. However many it is, it's two or three less than Vince Gilligan had said it in interviews or has been have that referenced, because goddamn, every single interview to people, they love to bring that up. So
it's
yeah,
a good line.
It is a good line.
To be fair.
It is a good line.
And it's a good premise.
But what did you think of the episode?
I thought it was really good. I thought, you know, we had a pretty dark end to season two. I think it was nice to have a little bit of comedy come back to the show. Last episode was pretty funny. There were some moments, one of the all-time funny scenes of Breaking Bad, but I felt like it was more dispersed throughout this episode.
Sure.
With the comedy, you get Saul coming back.
Yep.
Saul's always a good comedy relief
some classic
character.
Mike moments.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We start to really understand who Mike is, who Gus is a little bit more.
Yeah.
Those were all good things.
Very impressed with how quickly Mike rounded into shape. Like, I had this impression of him of kind of just knocking around for a season or two, being kind of, you know, a background character. And then he, you know, morphs into the Mike we know. But he's kind of, it's all there.
Seems like it.
Like, the world-weary attitude, the withering one-liners, like, you know, the contempt for one Walter White. It's kind of all there.
Sure. Are we ready to get into the recap?
Yes, sir.
We start up with Jesse filling up the RV with gas, and he goes inside the gas station, but he doesn't have the money to pay for it, and so he tries to pay with meth. The clerk is, as he's kind of describing the feeling of meth and trying to sell meth to her, this state trooper walks in, and Jesse doesn't faze him.
Doesn't give a fuck.
No, it's pretty ice impressive. Cold. Yeah, and so the clerk finally takes the meth and he drives off.
He's just ice cold, period, man. Like, trying to sell meth to this clearly decent girl, you know, and telling her, oh, no, that's more of a media thing. It's not addictive.
Yeah, come on. He doesn't believe any of that.
Pretty cringy to watch Jesse do this, man.
Yeah,
it's
especially
pretty rough.
After last season, and I know, you know, his girlfriend didn't overdose on meth, but come on, meth, heroin, are we really going to quibble too much about that?
Sure.
He's got to feel a little bit bad about what he's doing.
Meth is one of the, I mean, there's a couple drugs, like, you know, weed's
there
not
going to... There are classes of drugs, right?
Yeah, I mean, it can ruin your life in the sense that you drop out of college and never get a good job.
What, meth?
No, weed.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, alcohol, I mean, alcohol,
I can do the same.
but like, you know, meth and heroin, they're all kind of in their own category of just like crocodile, whatever the Russians are shooting in their toenails. That's the stuff that, you know, regardless of illegality, you just shouldn't do it. Not even once.
I'm with you. That's how I feel about it. But yeah, Jesse... It's a shame to see Jesse selling this so hard after what he's been through.
He's hungry. He's certainly got the itch to get back into business.
And he doesn't give a fuck.
I mean,
he's
I guess
the bad guy now.
If you're the bad guy, then, you know, you might as well get the, if you're going to accept all the pathos and the pain, you might as well get the guts and the glory.
Sure. I'm with you. We go to Saul, who is fitting one of his clients for a neck brace that he clearly doesn't need. Mike walks into his office with this recording of Walt and Skyler arguing over the Ted thing and over meth. And
that was a really nice comedic moment, because you first are trying to, you think that Saul is trying to compel testimony, like, okay, I get it, but it does it hurt? Like, are you in pain? Can we get pain and suffering? And no, he's like, I don't care how it feels. Is it hurting? Yeah, is it hurting you? Because if not, then get on the goddamn stand. It's great. And he's trying to hawk a class action lawsuit for the Wayfarer crash, because why not?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then there's this argument on the tape that they listen to, and Walt says, hey, I'm going to go see Ted face to face.
Yeah.
We definitely have a problem there.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't, because he didn't come back with the suit yourself this, you know, I'm going to suit myself to his face. Like, okay, this is kind of a euphemism.
And it's hilarious to see this big box of neck braces. This is not the first time Saul has done this.
Oh, no.
He peddles these neck braces around town. Walt then goes to Ted's office, where he finds Ted hiding from him. He tries to smash in the window to his actual office with a flower pot, but it doesn't work. And he's forcibly removed from the building. And then
Plan B.
He kind of spots this side door and tries to go for it, but Mike swoops in, snatches him up, and takes him away.
He just handles him. Like some kind of crazy cop judo hold. Like wrist, elbow, back of the car. No chance to resist.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a lot. He's a lot more familiar with this than Walt is, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
This scene is really hilarious, just top to bottom. It's Walt. He's so angry, and he goes in here, and he's like, oh, okay, he's in a meeting. Well, I can wait.
And Ted's kind of a coward, but he's also, Ted's dumb, right?
Ted's real dumb.
Ted is just dumb as hell.
He's looking out his window. His
secretary's saying, there's a crazy guy wanting you, whose wife you are fucking. and he's out here in the lobby, and his response is, you know, on, man.
No, it's a bad idea. Work. And then, you know, when Walt goes over and tries to pick up this vase or flower pot, whatever it is, and Skyler comes down and she's like, Walt, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, it's fine, honey.
I'm just talking to Ted. And already you can tell people are starting to give Skyler the stink eye.
Oh, yeah.
Just because the, you know, messing with the office chemistry. Because, you know, like with the whole, it's like, okay, with the Mr. President thing, and now
the way she got the job in the first place.
Yeah, and that kind of rankles, and now we're like, not only are you screwing her, but this is coming in affecting our office.
Yeah.
Like some dangerous, crazy person's coming in. Yeah, I can see why she's getting this isn't just prude, I don't think. I think this is like people, like, this is just unprofessional bullshit.
Absolutely. I'm with him. So Mike takes Walt back to Saul's office, where Saul tells him he needs to get his shit together. And Walt figures out through this course of this conversation that Saul has bugged his house. Saul says the wrong set of words that set Walt off, and he attacks him, and he fires him, and Mike has to shove him out the door. And
after he watches it for a good 15, 20 seconds, kind of rolling his eyes.
It's these like two physically impotent people going at it, and it's really hilarious.
It is. It's like watching the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man fight himself. It's just nothing's happened. There's no blows landing.
No. Nobody's really going to get hurt.
No.
And Walt demands that the bugs be removed. And I love the line on his way out. You just bought a $300 suit, psycho. Because it's meant as like a, haha, I gotcha, but it's a $300 suit.
There's
man.
A lot of really ineffectual insulting going on in this episode. Yeah. There's another classic line later, but yeah, okay. I don't buy that's a $300 suit. That's a 2-for-1 S&K Men's Warehouse suit.
And B, even if it is a $300 suit, big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk to me when you get an $800 suit, when it's worth at least one microphone.
Yeah, ask the cousins. About their suits. And they don't give a... They're spilling blood on it, rolling in mud.
Yep.
You had to be a little bit more blasé about the threads, man.
For sure. Mike removes the bugs as Walt kind of berates him the whole time. And Mike takes it all in stride and tells him it doesn't hurt to have someone watching your back, which is interesting considering when Mike pulls away from the house here, we see on the street,
the
there's been a scythe, yeah, drawn on the road. And it's interesting because obviously I think that's a Santa Muerte tie in there.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the symbolism of death and all that stuff. It's very menacing. But at the same time, there were some people who were saying, oh, because the episode of Hobo Code from Mad Men had just happened not too long before this.
Right.
And people were like, oh, this is a dishonest man, because that's what it means in Hobo Code. And I'm like,
no, I'm pretty sure.
Obviously, it's a threat. It's not the dishonest man thing. And that's where I feel like sometimes on these podcasts and the internet in general, speculation can kind of just run away with you.
Sure.
And you can make connections where there aren't, especially when it comes to like pop culture references, like, oh, this line was kind of the same in this movie. And one of the characters in that movie was a criminal. So this guy's dirty or something like that.
Yeah.
That shit's just over the top.
Sure.
It has a very obvious meaning here.
I mean, I live in a glass house, so I try not to throw stones. But yes, I'm pretty sure the cousins are not followers of the hobo way.
I don't think so. No.
They do occasionally ride in the back of a truck, sure. Yeah.
If maybe they've stolen some hobo's clothes, left him a suit.
Indeed. But I think that's where you draw the line.
I didn't remember that scythe at all, though.
I didn't either. Like, it was like a new piece of information to me. Like, not like, oh, I forgot that. I just, like, I don't think I noticed it the first time I watched it.
I mean, it's kind of important. It tells you that the cousins are really itching to get Walt.
If you miss it, like, Mike hammers at home later in the episode.
He does,
so, I don't feel too bad, but yeah, I was kind of surprised. Also, I love how just long suffering Mike is. Like, Walt has no idea who he's fucking. Well, he should. The guy just handed his ass without trying twice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, gave him the full atomic wedgie treatment the second time, and Walt's just talking steady talking shit. And also, you're a fucking drug dealer, man. Don't be talking about someone having a real upstanding field. It's like, you know, fine line of work you got. Like, speaking of guys in glass houses, Walter White.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Walt's just becoming more and more unhinged here. You know, he's kind of losing sight of everything in his life.
Maybe he wants an ass beat. You're right. I mean, this next scene with Walt at school with Carmen, Jesus. You want to talk about that?
Sure. He's just sitting at school. He's completely zoned out in his classroom, and his students are just staring at him. And then the principal comes in. She's been called over because he's acting weird.
Yeah.
And she pulls him out of the class. They talk about his behavior, and during this conversation, he moves in for a kiss. He's trying to hit on her.
The whole time he's being super inappropriate. And
at
every stage of the sexual escalation, she is like shutting it down until she finally, and trying to ignore it, because clearly she cares for him in the sense of, this is a valued coworker, an upstanding member of
the
community.
She feels for him with the cancer.
And,
yeah.
You know, this is weird, not like him, but, you know, finally enough is enough. And I got that he was fired. This is not a suspension. This is like, you get your shit out and go home.
I thought so, too.
Okay.
He tries to play it as a sabbatical, but...
Sure.
I mean, we don't know for sure.
When they hire a new chemistry teacher, Junior will know, because he goes to this high school.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also interesting that this seems to me like... he's trying to pay back Skylar a little
bit. Oh, totally.
Like, he's making a move on her purely because he wants to say, oh, well, let's see how she likes it.
And I will say that I was one of the ones that kind of thought that there was a little chemistry between Carmen and Walt in previous seasons. Like, she was a little, not flirty, but, you know, one of the things where I don't think she would just be repulsed at the idea of Walt coming on to
her. If he weren't, like, a married man.
He wasn't a married man and obviously acting strangely and all that stuff. You know, she's not an idiot. She's not going to get involved in that kind of thing. But yeah, and for him to just go in there and just be this oblivious and gross. I mean, did he really want to get revenge on Skylar, or?
I feel like that was part of it.
It was part of it, but
also
I'm saying
he's like, just kind of out of it.
It's one of the things where when you try something, your heart's not in it, you fail because your heart wasn't really into it. I don't think he really wanted revenge with Skylar. It's, you know. Because it was a poor attempt.
It definitely was. But I feel like Walt's not a smooth guy around women. And I don't know why I get that impression.
Do you think
because
he's...
he kind of is in the flashbacks we see with Ellie or with Gretchen?
Not totally inept, and like he was in season one, you know, had a little bit of magnetism going with his little, you know, the gangster vibe he was rocking. But here it's just pathetic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's real pathetic here. Anyway, we go over to Marie, dropping Hank off at the airport. And he's trying to justify to her why he's not going back to El Paso. And I feel like he's working against himself here, too, right? He's saying all these things, but I don't feel like he's telling her the real reason he's not going back to El Paso.
No. He's arguing to go to El Paso in this scene.
Or, yeah, why he's going back to El Paso. He's not telling her the things that are going through his head.
No,
he's telling her what he feels like she wants to hear, even though she's saying the opposite of that.
That's what we just discussed this last episode. Like, yes, she was all about corporate climb or, you know, climbing into agency and going to Washington and how much more cosmopolitan
that
would be.
And he mentions that here, yeah.
But you can see it on look at her face, like, no, the plan has changed. I don't want to see you go, you know, another turtle head explosion.
And the weird thing is he agrees with her, but at the same time, he's too proud and he's too, I guess, concerned with moving up for her sake that he's unwilling to say, yes, I don't want to go.
It's
a very complex thing going on here. And I feel like it's easy to understand, but hard to articulate.
Yeah. I mean, his pride in his masculinity is compelling him to go forward when he knows that he is not prepared and not ready to do so.
Yeah.
He's not going to back down, and he's increasingly desperate. Like, this conversation he has later with Merker, I think, is the best example of that.
Yeah, even though he's still self-deluded, he's at least starting to back off this pretense a little bit.
But the thing is like, it's hard to separate, because this obsession he has with the blue...
That's true.
...is a real thing, but I'm starting to wonder if it's a chicken or egg thing. Like, did he become completely obsessed with the blue because he is clinging to that justification for why he didn't go to El Paso and why he missed this opportunity? And does that become the obsession then?
Mm-hmm.
Or was he always obsessed with it and this was just a convenient excuse? It's hard for me to say which of those sides I'm more on, because there's plenty of evidence to suggest that, you know,
yeah, I think
this becomes his white whale in this season.
Yeah, I really think his reasons for not going back to El Paso are many-fold. You know, it's not just one thing. It's several things.
Plus, even aside from the turtle bomb, he wasn't having a good time in El Paso.
No, he didn't speak the language.
Literally.
That he needed to speak. Yeah. Yeah. He wasn't liked. He was seen as...
The skills he have do not suit him well in El Paso.
For sure. So, yeah, in this scene, he gets a call about some blue meth showing up, and he decides, I'm going to skip my flight, and I'm going to go investigate.
Do you think that this is good for him? Because I think he's starting to develop the skills that would make him valuable to a place in El Paso. Like, some of the actual police work he does, super strong.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Hank never struck me as the type of guy to do this kind of police work before.
Yeah, I mean, we saw some stuff with the barrels. I mean, he has done... It's always good to see the affirmation that he's still a good detective,
right? You're right.
We just don't see it very often.
Yeah. He's got it, but it's so easy to just rip and roll, and more fun, too. Uh-huh. So, you know, why don't you do that instead?
Just leave your gun in the car.
Who has time to look through 29 different goddamn RVs when you can just go bust some heads and get a bust?
I feel like he really got lucky with this phone call, because it kept him off a Wayfarer flight. just say it.
Yeah. Well, you know, you fly on the government's dime. It's some cheap airfare.
It's true.
Wayfarer, it's an empty plane. He's the only one on it.
Walt packs up his stuff and leaves the school for an indefinite sabbatical, as he calls it. Jesse's waiting in the parking lot, and he asks if Walt will introduce him to Gus. And he shows Walt this big bag of meth that he's cooked, which pisses Walt off.
This is some petty shit.
It totally is. He yells at Jesse for fucking up this cook, which it's debatable whether or not he did, and also
instead of being impressed
using his formula.
I mean, I think the valid reaction, and I think here's the thing, Walt is secretly impressed that he did this with the equipment he had and the knowledge he had and just watching
and
a couple
on his
times.
Own. Yeah.
But that impressment also turned immediately into a threat, which the only way it seems like the pattern he deals with Jesse is to, you know, tear him down.
And it's a double slap in the face, because here he is saying, oh, you have plenty of skills, son. Outside of cooking meth, that's not your only thing. Jesse asks him what they are, and he's like, I don't know, but you've got them. And then a moment later, he's tearing down his skills at the one thing that Jesse says he's good at. Sure. So it's really just a slap in the face to Jesse.
It's a really terrible father-son relationship they got going on here. But Jesse won because he says, eat me. And then Walt goes, anytime, loser.
All right.
Oh, man. It's so good. And then also, the context of this is Jesse has his shit. He's doing Walt a favor. Uh-huh. And Walt is acting this way. And then, of course, as soon as he pulls away, you see the box of his shit.
I love it.
Come and just smash on the ground because that's how stupid Walt is.
Yeah. Yeah, Walt.
He's the smartest dumb guy I've ever met.
He is. He's.
Or maybe the dumbest smart guy.
I think it works both ways. Mm. So Skylar's zoned out. She's equally as zoned out as Walt was earlier while she's making some copies here. And the receptionist comes into the room and Skylar tries to make some small talk and she is not having it at all. And then Skylar and Ted are boning at his house and he offers to let Skylar move in at his place, but she's not interested in that.
Can you imagine what the fuck Junior would do?
Can
you even imagine?
What is Ted thinking?
He
had sex with this woman one time. She's married. She has children. She's just going to move into your house, man.
Ted's a dumb guy.
He really is.
He really is.
And he tries to talk about what went wrong with Walt, and Skylar doesn't want to talk about that. And they just kind of leave it at that, and she goes off home.
Yeah, but I mean, she can't stay with it because, again, if she shacked up with Ted... She thinks she's on an island now. She'd be on the fucking International Space Station.
Yeah.
Because Marie would be like, oh, it's not Walt at all. It's Skylar with this Ted, because I've always thought this. And Junior would be like, what the fuck? Even Holly, that's her first words, would be what the fuck. So, yeah. Good play to keep this on the down low, Skylar.
Yeah. Skylar seems, I don't know, smarter than Walt in these practical matters. In some ways.
Although, I kind of feel like they are building subtle parallels between her and Walt, because Walt's big sin is he can't read the temperature of the room. Like, he's kind of delusional about where he stands with people. And here's Skylar at the copy machine just making small talk, completely oblivious to how uncomfortable people are about this whole thing.
I know that IFT stands in opposition to the statement I'm about to make, but I think Skylar is less reactionary than Walt. On a whole.
Huh. Okay, defend that. What do you mean?
I think, like you said about Mike earlier, she is longer suffering. She's willing to tolerate more bullshit until she lashes out, whereas Walt is very impulsive and gets angry very quickly and gets defensive and all this stuff.
But Walt has been swallowing anger as food for like 40, however old he is.
It's true.
48 years, right? Is where he's at now?
50?
Is it 50?
I want to say it was his 50th birthday when
yeah, you're right, started. You're right. Because I was trying to think, I was thinking the bacon configurations, and I was like, 40?
Yeah.
Okay. He's been doing this for many, many years, and ever since the cancer, it's like word salad if you're having a seizure. Like, that's what it's coming out on. It's this anger. It's just pouring out of him, and it's right there buried at the surface. Even if you're dealing with a cop threatening to mace you, you can't keep it in. So
I'm not saying there aren't reasons for it. I'm just saying that's their demeanor.
Sure.
Currently. I really like the transition here from the copy scene into the bedroom. You got like pictures of Ted and his kids and stuff, and you can kind of see the reflection of them having sex over Ted's head with his two children beside
Ted's
him.
Ted's big dumb head.
Yeah.
Ted might be dumb, but he sounds like he's good in bed. Unless Skylar's just really putting him over.
Yeah.
Because she seems like she's having a really good time.
Hank interrogates the guy with the blue, who is a mega tweaker. He can't
this guy.
Anything. They don't get any info out of him other than the guy had tan pants and he's 80% sure he had a mustache.
Right. Like, his brain is in the red line just trying to remember this guy's name. He's got to hold his skull together because this whole thing is about to fly apart.
Yeah. These are the things you remember on meth. He's very sure about the tan pants.
It's Ned Flanders. Ted Pants and Mustache.
Uh-huh.
But no, the what is he? Do you think that this is a sly Villiganism that he's thinking it's so? It's an M, but it's actually a W. But when did Walt ever sell pizza shit to people?
So, I think it turns out that it is in fact an M sound, because I think Hank tracks down all the people with the M names in whatever area. So this Matt from the
gas station also has tan pants and a mustache, just like Walter did.
I don't know. I'm slightly unclear on the line that Hank takes to get to this.
That Matt. This teenth is the one that Jesse gave the girl Kara, uh-huh. who then gave it to Max, which is uh-huh. an M sound.
Who sold it to this guy?
This guy, I guess, but this. So I guess Matt has tan pants and a mustache.
He must. Yeah,
you're right. I just assumed this was a long lost Heisenberg thing, but then
I think he's right.
No, you're right. You're right.
It took all of his brain power, but he did pull out one letter.
Interesting. Because so if Hank is compiling a notes for Heisenberg, he could write down tan pants and a mustache. And
sure. I mean, that's a dead giveaway for Walt.
It's a ringer. Yeah. Tan pants and a mustache. That's the man's season one mission statement.
Forget the ATM camera, just tan pants and a mustache. You should know, Hank.
Yeah.
You should know.
Yeah.
Anyway, he goes out into the hall, and he's starting to figure out how to track down Heisenberg, and Gomi is out there, too, and he's concerned about Hank acting strange and blowing off El Paso, and he tries to bring it up, but Hank's not interested in hearing it.
Yeah,
and
he gets
very angry.
This is how defensive he is about these problems he's having, and what a threat that his manhood it is. He just can't handle it.
I mean, it only seemed like they had a, you know, playfully antagonistic relationship, but here
it's always weird when you have that kind of relationship with a guy that then turns touchy-feely.
Touchy-feely, like Gomez is?
Yeah, like, see, you got a guy who's mostly just bust balls and, you know, it's all shits and giggles, and then for whatever reasons, it's time to get heavy. Like, maybe he blurts out his mom's dying of cancer sometime, and it's like, oh, I don't even know how to interact with you in this level, you know? But Gomi was going there, and Hank's having none of it. He was just a giant dick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Hank's not the kind of guy who wants to talk about any of this stuff, even with Marie.
I get it.
So when Gomi brings it up, I think it's extra offensive. On top of, Hank doesn't want to bring it up because he knows that, you know, things will come out about his feelings about El Paso.
He doesn't want to deal with any of that.
Yeah.
But he could say, look, I don't want to, I get it, you're my partner, I don't want to talk about it. You don't have to be like, get your fucking hand off my shoulder. That was a little strong.
Or I'll break it off or something, whatever he says.
Or Gomi.
Yeah. Jesse shows up at Saul's office with the big bag of meth he's cooked, and he tells Saul, I want you to hook me up with the guy that your guy knows, which we know is Gus.
Yep.
And so Mike and Gus meet at this parking garage where Mike delivers a status report on Walt's mental health and his physical health. He tells Gus Walt's not doing so well mentally and that Jesse has some meth to sell. And Gus doesn't care until he hears that Jesse and Walt have parted ways and kind of gets a look in his eye and goes, set up the deal. I think one of the better lines for Mike so far has been where he says that where Gus is asking him like how long Walt's got, and he's like a couple of years at least, you know, barring any acts of God or men with axes.
right.
Pretty good. And then so we see that Gus is driving this, you know, nondescript Volvo. It's a very normal looking car. I'm very inconspicuous, and I wonder, like, if you're a rich franchisee owning multiple locations and probably have a lot of money, is there anything such as like too inconspicuous to where you start to become conspicuous by your inconspicuity?
I don't know. See, I always saw the Volvo as like Pokemon style. Like you take what is that fucking Firemander and you evolve it and it becomes a Charizard.
Sure.
If you evolve the Aztec, it becomes the Volvo.
All right.
It's the exact kind of like hide in plain sight. It's like there's this one really funny Portlandia episode where the aggressive like punk rock biker is going to buy a car.
Yeah.
And this guy's telling him about, and he shows him a Volvo. He's like, this is basically the default setting for an automobile, you know? Like, yeah, that's what a Volvo is. It's a car.
All right. All right. So he likes to hide in plain sight.
I think
as,
so.
As is obvious by owning this chicken joint and driving this car. Hank pulls off the road, checks his messages on his phone. He has one from his boss telling him, you need to call me back about this El Paso thing. He gets out of his car. He walks into the gas station that Jesse was at earlier this episode. He asks where the meth came from, and the clerk tells him that the guy drove this RV, and that's all she really knows. And Hank sees his security camera, asks if it works. It doesn't.
He's really menacing. I feel sorry for Kara.
Yeah.
She's had a rough week.
Yeah.
She's had the charming.
He got bullied into... charmed slash bullied.
Yeah. And honestly, I think the only reason she took the meth in the end is because the cop was there, and...
Yeah.
Jesse was just going to let it sit on the counter.
And she felt like she would have been in trouble had he seen it.
Yeah, no, she's like just so far out of it. I feel so sorry for her. She's never going to do a bad thing again in her life.
No. No, she's not.
Yeah.
She's going to join a monastery
I think next so. Week. I think so. She's going to the nunnery.
But yeah, then there's Hank going outside, and as he's leaving, he spots an ATM. He investigates which way the camera's pointing, and he realizes, aha!
Score.
Bingo. Got it on camera, the RV. So here's where we kind of connect the dots with this list of M names, right? He whips out a notepad where we see he's got a whole bunch of M names marked off and the bottom three are still left.
Where did he get these M names?
I have no idea. That's where I don't... Like, you can't go look for every M name in Albuquerque.
But I wonder if he's, like, looking for everyone that had a rap sheet on meth in the last 5 years beginning
Maybe.
With the M. Like... Mm-hmm. You know, that's probably where you'd start, and just starts interviewing them and crossing and, you know, rolling up Hank Tough on them and
yeah,
having to spill their guts.
Yeah. However he got it, and he got it. Then we go to breakfast at the White House. We got a breakfast count.
We're back up. We're up to 8 out of 12 or 8 out of 11. Again, the discrepancy in mm-hmm. the season one omelet gate, as we call it.
And this was apparently a particularly good breakfast. Junior comments on
yeah.
it. He's like, good work, Mom.
I think he's trying. I mean, poor Junior. Mm. He's really trying to hold this family together, and which yeah. is a burden no young man should have on their shoulders.
Yeah, I mean, they're sitting across
especially
the table
with
here.
Crutches. That's way too much weight to put on his shoulders.
I agree. I can't help but notice, like, Skylar holding up this newspaper, not even wanting to look at Walt, right?
And also just, like, Junior, oh, man, it's just, and they're just being terrible to each other, and mm-hmm. Walt, Junior gets wrapped up because he's trying to, you know, it's like, hey, it's been days since the last donation. Well, people lose interest. And just his face when this is going on is... It really made me, really bummed me. Yeah, because, like, I've seen, like, him be angry and saying his bullshit, and it's almost like I thought of him as a prop. Like, oh, this is to illustrate the fact that, you know, he's really being shitty to Skylar. But I'm really yeah. starting to see, as a person, this is really affecting him.
Yes, you're right. You got to feel bad for Junior. Also, I noticed in this scene, it is super dark in the dining room now, and I think it's because they have the blinds closed, but that wasn't the case earlier. They're using the lighting to great effect here. I liked it.
Yeah, it's like Vito Corleone's office, man. Like mm-hmm. it's getting dark in here.
Yeah. Jesse goes to meet Victor under a bridge, and he trades the meth for a big bag of cash, but he realizes it's only half of it, and when he says, hey, where's my money, Victor's like, that's right, it's your half, implying that someone else is going to get the other half. Anything you want to say about that, or keep going?
In the spoiler section, sure.
Okay. Hank goes into Merkert's office, where he asks if Hank's going to El Paso. He says, sure, I'm going to El Paso after I catch this Heisenberg guy. He shows the pictures he got from the ATM. He says he's going to hunt down these 29 bounders that are registered in New Mexico. Merkert's eyebrows go up like, oh, only 29, huh?
You know what, though? I actually thought that seemed like a very workable number.
Kinda.
No,
yeah.
I mean, the thing is like he's realizing that Hank's not going down to El Paso. Like El Paso's not going to hold this open for him, and he's not going. And yeah. like you can hear like Hank's voice continuing to go up the octave scale mm-hmm. as like, you know, he's clearly dodging this El Paso gig, but he's also obsessed with this Heisenberg thing.
Yeah.
But he's scared shitless to go down to El Paso.
Yeah. And he gets asked in this scene point blank, are you going to El Paso tonight, right now? He says no. But then he plays it off. He's like, because I got to catch this guy.
Yeah.
They got a big thing going here, and I'm about to blow it wide open.
Sure.
I got some stuff that about this scene that I want to talk about in the spoiler section, but...
All right.
First, we have one more scene. Walt's driving down the road. He's listening to the radio, and on comes this report about Donald Margolis being admitted to a hospital for self-inflicted gunshot wounds. He tried to kill himself. We know that that's Jane's dad, for people who aren't up on that. Mm-hmm. He stops a light, and Victor pulls up beside him, throws his half of the cash into the window, and then the light turns green, hence the name of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of symbolism with the green light.
Sure.
You know, everybody's trying to get Walt to have the green light to get back in the meth game. He's got a literal green light here. It's, you know, it's pretty obvious what I think Walt wants to do at this point.
You know where there wasn't a green light? Carmen's office. That was flashing red, railroad crossing, don't go over, and he still drove through the barricade.
Yep.
Flipped his wagon, his emotional sexual wagon over, and got hit by a freight train.
I do love the look on Walt's face when this bag of money just comes flying into the window.
Well, he's like already kind of mouth agape at this whole Jane's dad situation.
Yeah.
Because like this is even like, he talks a good game, but he's got to be like, feel the weight. He's got to be feeling all this.
Yeah, I mean, the way he reaches for that knob so fast after hearing this.
Yeah, he just can't fucking take it.
Yeah.
And then this cash comes bouncing in. It's your half. Wow. Wow.
If you didn't... wrong time to give him a reminder, right? Of the carnage that he's caused.
Yeah.
Anything else to say about that?
No, I feel like we are flirting with the shortest Breaking Bad recap of all time.
How are we doing on feedback?
We've got a couple, one in the main, and then a couple in the spoiler. Our old buddy Tom G from West Virginia, he has a comment for episode 2, which I can't remember the name. That's not the horse with no name, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, it is. Anyway, he said, I should have noticed this before, but in season 3, episode 2, Walt returns home to find that the locks have been changed, so he enters through the crawl space. The crawl space has an uncovered dirt floor without a plastic radon barrier. That's how Walt got cancer. Radon is the number 2 cause of lung cancer. People, learn what you can do to prevent it at epa.gov/radon. He says, man. I'll take my MD degree now. Thank you. So thanks for the public service announcement.
So Skyler's got lung cancer. Junior's got lung cancer.
Well, it's not a guarantee. Holly's it's not like radon's a guarantee. It just significantly increases your risk. So get you at least have a radon detector.
Yeah.
That makes me think, because like the house I was living in back in Greenfield did not have, it was just peat gravel.
No barrier underneath that.
I didn't have a radon detector either. That was built in the 70s. So
living dangerously.
Before they discovered radon.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's it?
Well, if I pass out, if I pass out moving all these chemical barrels in the studio, you know, make sure I get some medical attention.
We should really get lids for those.
That's all the feedback. If you'd like to give us more, please send it into breakinggood@baldmove.com. Please put in the episode title or number. And if you're ahead of us or behind us, whatever, that will help me pull it out of the feedbag. The mailbag. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing with this feedbag.
Just
shit.
Go with it, man.
Strap it on the feedbag all week long.
Yeah.
And also you can go to our forums, theforums.baldmove.com. We've got all the episodes subdivided into their own little categories in the Breaking Good subforum. You can also leave the feedback. But that's it until we get to the spoilers.
Okay. Well, let's do that. If you want to hear spoilers, stick around after the music, because that's where they are. And if not, we'll see you next week with 305. I think it's called Moss. So draw your own conclusions there.
Time for some Moss.
Yep. And until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we're back with the spoiler section. What do we have?
Are you ready to board the Gus bus?
Yeah, let's do it.
All every day. The Gus bus to Honduras.
Every day.
What is Gus trying to do here?
He's trying to get Walt back in the game.
But how?
Appealing to his pride.
Hmm. I Yeah.
I'm not actually certain. It's kind of complicated.
Okay.
Gus clearly has this notion that if he can show Walt that Jesse is in fact selling his stuff to Gus and that Gus is willing to work with Jesse, Walt might be so indignant at the idea that Gus is willing to work with Jesse that he'll come at least talk to him, at least entertain the idea, and maybe be insulted and angry and have something to prove.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good analysis.
Bullshit. Here I come. Watch this.
It's a pretty good analysis. I just wonder where he's getting this psychology from, because like I don't feel like he knows Walt that well. And like what Walt said, about him being out. I felt like this would be a better tactic to split them up, but they're already split up. So maybe it's just a Hail Mary. And I don't know what Gus's endgame is. You know, we discussed this quite a bit in the first episode. I'd love to hear people's opinions on it. But I don't have a clear-cut idea of exactly what he's trying to do here and what his endgame was. Like, he's going to give him a week to try to come to his senses, and then is it going to be like snatch you up off the sidewalk with a black hood, and then you got the neo-Nazi chain around your waist, and there you go, because
I don't know. I mean, this is the episode where he says fear. He doesn't view fear as an effective motivator.
Which is why we talked about it so much in episode one.
Yeah, and obviously at some point that changes.
Yeah. Is that something he was just saying? Because Gus might be one of those chameleon guys where he knows that Mike will tolerate a certain type of criminal, but if he goes around just like torturing and killing fools all the time, that would probably turn Mike off. You know,
knowing what we know about Mike, I could see that. Yeah.
So it could be like, if I'm trying to take everything I know about Mike and everything I know about Gus, that, you know, again, our theory that Gus is just kind of biding his time. And then as he gets closer to his revenge, his true colors start to come out. And you know, he's also needs Mike and needs Mike to be his soldier, and if he disillusions Mike, man, that might be all part of it. And also you know, he's got to be playing meek for the cartel too. Like, if he's this fire breathing, you know, ruthless boss of Albuquerque, the cartel might be a little suspicious.
Yeah.
And might keep a closer eye on him. So I guess there's a lot of good reasons. It just seems like you got to think about it a bit. And I still don't know exactly why or how that he expected this to work and how he knew that would be so effective.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what happens after this in season three and how exactly he gets back into the game. I remember this money gambit, but I don't remember many scenes after it.
Well, there's the Gale. I mean, Gale is going to be coming in a big way in the second half of the season. And
yeah. So, I mean, Jesse and Walt are still kind of split up for a while, right?
Sure.
Because like, Walt's cooking with Gale before Jesse gets involved.
I know what brings Walt and Jesse back together is the savage ass beating that Hank gives him, and then Walt having to tell him, probably because it's honest and also because he's trying to manipulate Jesse not to burn Hank to the ground, as he tells him, your cook is as good as mine. But then he's in a touchy situation because now he's got to fire Gale. And it's just like, it gets complicated.
You know, the firing of Gale is interesting. We talked last episode about whether or not Gus was going to let Walt get out of this. I think it's clear that he has, you know, these machinations to get him back cooking again.
Oh, you're right.
But he does let Gale go without killing him.
Yeah.
Because Gale comes back later on. And then, you know, we all know who kills him. But there does seem to be a way out with Gus.
Well, but do you think that... Oh, man. I don't know.
I don't know what Gale's doing at when he's on sabbatical.
That's the thing. Like, I wonder if he's like, it's understood that he'll take it back over. And also, like, there's cameras recording everything that Walt does. And Gale had already gotten a couple cooks under his belt that kind of gotten all the secrets and stuff. So
it's tough when you start saying, like, these characters are long con geniuses, like Gus and Walt. And you got to wonder what their motivations are, even when they allow you to do something that seems good on the surface.
And also, the other thing is, like, I think that the Vince Gilligan is a genius, But we also know he was making this shit up as he went along. Like, he had a general idea. Sure.
Yeah.
So it would not surprise me, and not really hurt my overall enjoyment, if there were a few things that are kind of head-scratching with what you know that there is to come. Like, mm-hmm. if you have fuzzy memories of how it all went down, it's like, oh, yeah, it's all tracks. But, like, uh-huh. the really fine details might not add up with these motivations. And because Gus fundamentally is a different person in season four than he is in season three.
Yeah.
And I'm not – I think it's an awesome direction to take him, but uh-huh. I think that came out of the writing room and – yeah, some of his behavior has to kind of be retconned. It's kind of amazing it works as well as it does. But yeah, it's not going to surprise me. Mm. And also, it's also not going to shock me if by the end of the season, we're like, oh yeah, this totally makes sense.
Yeah.
We've forgotten a couple details. I didn't remember the side that it was drawn on. You know, it's like mm-hmm. we'll have a sidewalk chalk side moment. And
yeah, that's why I don't want to just say, yeah, none of this makes sense.
It's bullshit, Billigan. What the fuck? What are you, a Scott Gimple here?
So I was reading Sepinwall's review of this episode, and he really kind of blows open the tragedy that is Hank's future here, right? Like, we see in this episode Hank turning down El Paso, which basically means saying no to his future career opportunities and upward mobility in the DEA, I think. I mean, it'll take a while at least for him to earn that credit back. And on the other hand, if he goes and he does this big thing and he catches Heisenberg, he's kind of double fucked here, because this is his brother-in-law. Shouldn't he have seen this? Shouldn't he have been able to spot a Heisenberg from an inch away, you know?
Yeah, but
it's something we argue a lot more as the seasons sure. go on.
For Sepinwall to say this in episode four is perceptive, but yeah, I mean, after I've seen everything play out, then I think it was perfect. Like,
yeah.
They did such a great job of making Walt completely beyond suspicion.
Uh-huh. And it almost seems inevitable for Hank to die by the end of it. Honestly.
Well, sure.
Right? Because he is in a rock and a hard spot there. What's he going to do?
If
he catches Heisenberg, he also kind of shames himself, you know?
Yeah, but I mean...
It's bittersweet at best.
Him, I don't know, there could have been an alternate ending where him and Marie and Skyler and the kids go off to some other place in the country and they live a happier, quieter, you know, less stress-free life.
With $10 million with barrels of money?
Well, I wasn't thinking of that, but like, you know, with his DEA pension or, I mean, whatever. And I don't know. I mean, I don't necessarily think that he had to die, but I think Walt is like, and I never thought that Walt was not going to die. Like, okay. That's the one thing I was always sure, as soon as I started thinking about the question, that yes, Walt is not making out of the series alive. I was concerned with Jesse, I was concerned with Hank, I was concerned with Sky, everyone else, but Walt, I was convinced, was going to die.
Hmm. Okay. Anything else?
I actually have a bit of a feedback. Barry C. wants to know, when Jesse gives the gas station girl the meth, I kind of think that was perhaps the only quote-unquote evil thing he did. Obviously, he's killed people, most notably Gale, but that can be quite easily justified as a him or me situation. Most of the bad things Jesse does are a result of him being misguided or when he is backed into a corner. When he gave the girl the meth, it just seemed wrong. To kind of seduce an impressionable girl into taking one of the most addictive and damaging substances known to man almost seems like a character betrayal. The only reason why I didn't call complete bullshit on it was the fact that this was during his I'm the bad guy arc, where he was having a moral crisis. So one of the few things that Jesse mm-hmm. about the Jesse story that never quite sit well with me. What do you think?
Well, I think he...
Is it the worst thing he's done? Because is this worse than going to support meetings for people that are trying to free themselves of addiction of meth and selling them meth? Is it worse than that?
I'm going to say those are equivalent. Are equally evil.
And also, it's like, I don't think you can just slough off the Gale thing as a him versus me. This wasn't Gale. This was the consequences of Jesse's own actions biting him in the ass, and the only way to escape them was to kill this man. It wasn't Gale, like, you know, Crazy 8 Walt, him or me.
Mm-hmm.
Gale, Jesse, maybe the noble thing to do would just be to take the bullet, because Gale... I mean, Gale's manufacturing meth too. I get it.
But I mean, yeah, that's,
they're not morally equivalent things.
No, I mean, certainly Gale was not trying to kill Jesse. It was a him or me in that the only move he had to keep Gus from killing him was to kill Gale.
But if the only move he had would be to murder Holly, like, you know, it's like that's a clear, like, you know, making Gale a manufacturer of drugs kind of blurs the line there, too. But I mean,
Holly, you know, you want to frame it with an innocent baby. I don't think it changes the argument. It's still a her or me.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is like that's not a ethical get out of, you know.
No.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I agree. But it is a little more understandable than
sure.
just trying to hook this girl on meth or trying to hook recovering meth addicts on meth. Okay,
so he had a better reason.
Yeah, yeah.
But to me, it's like that's...
it's still morally reprehensible.
Yeah, your justifications do not really absolve you morally or ethically from a dilemma.
Would you apply the same to Walt across the board? Well,
Walt is a clear cut. I mean, especially by the end of the season. I know there are people...
I'm talking like specifically about cooking meth to provide for his family. Kind of the way it started out.
Because,
I mean, he's essentially doing the same thing that Jesse does in this episode, right?
So, Walt, if he just made meth and sold it to people and there was no bloodshed, then I don't really have a huge moral problem with that.
Sold it to people who were already doing meth and wanted the meth?
If Walt deserves death, then so does every fucking executive at Philip Morris. All right.
Okay.
So does everybody working at Budweiser. I mean, if you want to make that argument, it's an argument to degree.
Sure.
So it's like, but once people started dying and innocence got, and when Waltz first started, I don't think there were foreseeable occurrences because he just didn't understand, you know, how kind of ruthless you can't just go into a street corner and start selling meth because someone owns that street corner and they're going to be looking for your ass.
No, he looked at this as a high margin product.
It's like, this is going to be safer than what people are already going to do. Uh-huh. A better product. And again, they're already doing it anyway. And yes, it's a stain on my character, but I'm dying. So what?
Yeah,
that's a fairly morally defensible stance to take.
I'm mostly asking these questions. I don't have any good answers to these very muddy questions either.
Uh-huh.
If this girl comes to Jesse and says, hey, I'm looking for meth, and he sells her meth, entirely different, right?
Sure.
Okay.
But, I mean, there's even degrees of that. Like, an adult woman coming and said, I want to try meth. I'm ready to roll the dice with my life. 16-year-old? 14-year-old?
Yeah, I don't know how old this girl is.
No, I mean, I'm saying
think she's old.
No, I think she's legal age. At least college age, if not older. But I'm saying, like, where do you draw the line? Like a 16-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old? Like,
almost said I think she's old enough for meth, but I don't think anybody's old enough for
Surgeons
meth.
Surgeons General says, you know, you gotta be at least 21 or over.
All right, well, I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay.